Hey, Nick, welcome and happy new year to you. It's 2020.
Hi, Danko, and happy new year to you. It's 2021. Just kidding. It's 2020. But you can
use what a zinger. What a great way to kick off the new year.
It's double the worth because this has me clarifying it's 2020 afterwards, and then I say 2021. So use that audio drop in 2021.
So usually when we have a guest, Nick, you come by a little earlier, and
usually the plan
is for Nick to come a little earlier, and then we record a little quick intro.
Yeah.
And I think that was the plan
today.
8 years ago.
Yeah.
And then since then,
we tend to just do it in front of the person.
Now we just do it in front of them. So today's guest is in front of us quietly listening to us talk about him.
Wearing a hat. But you can't say anything.
And comedian, funny man in the Canadian comedy scene.
You know what? If you've seen him, you've laughed. That's how it works with this boy. And his name is
Chris Locke.
Yeah.
And I'm glad he's here. You always bring the comedians to the podcast.
I guess that's kind of like bringing the thunder.
Yeah, well, that's what I meant, right?
I've got you some serious gets, you know, and I should be your paid booker for
Andy guests. Kindler.
Yeah, but you know, you're actually much better at getting real celeb guests there. You go high. You've had Phil Anselmo.
Thank you,
Chris Locke. Everybody,
should we start? Yeah. I think Chris is itching to go.
Yeah.
Thank you for sneaking me in here, Nick.
You're welcome. And oh, yeah, into this magical headquarters.
Trojan horsing me in.
But we got to play the intro first.
Ladies and gentlemen, the intro song. The Danko Jones Podcast is the best around. Nick Flanagan is Danko's co-hotel for free. I'm so glad I like to sometimes.
Damn it, from fucked up. Stop playing. Hang down. Do. Well, welcome, Chris, to the podcast. That was a wonderful intro Nick and I did for you, I think.
Yeah, it was great.
We talked you up, I think.
Yeah, we said great things about you, Chris.
But Danko brings the real celebs on.
Danko usually brings... I guess I kind of insulted you there.
No, it's okay. I wouldn't walk around being like, hi, I'm a celeb.
You know what, though?
It's part of the Nick Flanagan package.
I know. Oh, I know about his package.
You know, I did listen to... was it you were on his podcast, Nick Flanagan Weekly, Chris?
Yes. Yeah.
And at first I thought, you know, oh, does Nick...
No, the mic is on.
Does Nick treat me differently? Does he talk to me differently than his other like comedic contemporaries? And the answer is no. There is an equal amount of disses.
No, it's like, not disses. Like, I'm not dissing
soft
anybody.
Disses.
I'm having fun, and you know.
Should
what?
We get into breaking down
Nick Flanagan?
Nick Flanagan already.
That was a podcast I tried with Tim Gilbert.
This is complicated. It's complicated.
We did that already. Actually, I don't know if you know about this, but Tim Gilbert came over here.
Yeah.
And we were going to record a Nick the first attempt at Nick doing a podcast.
Basically, one of them. You know.
And then it just turned real ugly because Tim and I just
tag-teamed
on Nick.
The podcast was, you know, tell me what's wrong with me.
I never know how far I can go with Nick, so this might be delicate.
No, it's not
exactly.
Delicate. It's not going to be delicate.
Look, he's uncomfortable.
It's not going to be delicate.
I am not delicate earlier. It's not going to be a super delegate.
I'll change.
Hi everybody. Let's start again. Hi everybody.
Let's
I'm
talk
comedian
about
Chris Locke. I tour all the time. I'm on TV all the time, and I have a friend in the comedy scene named Nick Flanagan who is not delicate.
No, I am delicate. I'm very delicate. I'm delicate with people sometimes.
So
Nick is like the wind.
Nick's always throwing me names. You should get this person. You should get that person.
Yeah.
And you know, everyone's funny. You know, the names he throws into the hat.
Yeah.
But I always choose the ones that sounds bad to say, but got shit going on and have stuff out there that if you're a listener in such and such place, you can kind of connect with the conversation
because there's an album, there's a podcast, there's a vlog or something, or a TV show,
there's a vibe,
or a special.
There's a Twitter account. Yeah. There's LinkedIn.
Yeah, like, so it's not just someone who's really, you know, killing it on the local Toronto music scene. So you have two albums.
Or in this case, comedy scene.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say music scene?
You did.
Sorry.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's your world.
Yeah, it's your world.
So you've got two comedy albums.
Yeah, two, but they're independently produced. I recorded them myself, so I could put them on Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, all that myself. SiriusXM plays them on comedy channels here and in the States. And I also, but I'm a touring comic constantly through clubs and independent shows. And I'm an actor, and you can see me on some shows.
Wow. What are the shows?
Well, I got a new CBC, I'm in a CBC Gem web series coming out called Communist Daughter, and I got a scene coming up in the new season of Working Moms where I play, oh, I don't want to give it away, but it's one of the most, my friend edits on the show, and they said it's the most insane scene they've ever seen on the show, so I'm excited for people to see that. And then I've done, like, you know, stuff on, like, Baroness Von Sketch and Tall Boys and
Mr. D
and stuff like that.
God, you know what? I was saying this on my
podcast
yesterday.
So in Canada, I'm huge, which means
you're kind of
no
a big
one
deal.
Knows me.
Right.
Yeah.
You're kind
Except
of a
for
big
comedy
deal.
Fans, yeah.
Well, I mean, I've heard your comedy records.
I'm not a big deal, but comedy, but there is great comedy fans, yeah, in Canada.
Yeah.
And in the States. I go to the States, but you got to keep that on the DL sometimes, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, your comedy records are great, and so that was the thing that, you know, I reached out to Nick to get you after he'd thrown a few names.
That's really nice. I appreciate it. Thanks, Nick. Thanks
for having me. No problem.
Also, my live show, though, is what I like promoting the most because I'm crazy, and I do, it usually goes in between half material, half riffing, and I just put a weird 45-minute setup on my YouTube page that someone filmed and edited for me in Winnipeg.
Okay.
At the Handsome Daughter. I don't know if you've ever been out there.
I've been to that place.
I love that place.
Is that a music venue?
I usually go to, there's a club there that I do every year called Rumors, but the scene there, the independent scene, is amazing.
Oh, you said Winnipeg?
Yeah, so brought me up to Handsome Daughter. See, two sips of this coffee, and I told you I was go crazy, right?
Yeah, and you've got your resume, you're killing it.
Well, I'm just trying to get it out before you start talking again.
What do you mean? I've been silent.
But now that we got it out there, and like some people are listening, they're like, okay, he's established himself.
No, you kicked ass with that resume.
No, now I can chill, and I don't care. Let's party, whatever.
Yeah, well, I mean, you guys have... I bring up the comedy records with every comedic guest on the podcast with Nick. I always tend to focus on the albums because the records are kind of comedy records are a lost art form almost, you know?
Yeah, in many ways.
Yeah, if you want to get into it, I'll tell you what inspired me the first time I did it. I'm a mega Richard Pryor fan.
Mm-hmm.
And before his big ones, he did...
Laugh.
Yeah,
I mean, they weren't his own. Laugh just sort of bootlegged them, basically.
Maybe.
But
they feel like bootlegs.
Yeah. Who released Craps?
That's on Laugh Records. And that's such a...
Yeah, that's what I thought. So that one is my favorite. And it's just before he blew up with the... I can't say the title of the other one. You know what I mean?
He's crazy.
He's crazy? The crazy one?
Yeah.
Crazy Richard, it's called.
Super.
Nowadays.
Yeah. But I love that one, too. That one's a big influence on me. But the Craps one is like, you hear the clinking of the cutlery on the plates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody's screaming with joy. He's just being loose and silly the whole time. It's a party. And so I was like, even if I'm going to make, I just want to make something that sounds like that.
Yeah, yeah.
I just want people to, if they give it a sample of me, they check it out. It sounds like everybody in the room is partying and having a good time. So I don't care about the big, you know.
A few of his albums sound like that.
Yeah, though. Reverend Do-Right was one I had that sounds like that. And, I mean, most of the Laugh Records ones, ironically, you know, because they're probably bootlegs or had, lower quality recording quality, they sound better and they sound like you're in the room, you know, which is so cool.
I love that.
And, you know, in the early 2000s, I was on a comedy message board, and there were it was weird. Like in Canada, we weren't getting a lot of that weird, post Mr. Show stuff easily, like comedy clips of people like Sarah Silverman doing sets. And there were people who'd bootlegged entire sets by like Louis C.K. or Sarah Silverman and Zach Galifianakis, and they'd post it, and it was fun listening.
Yeah, the first
to these,
Louis C.K.
like,
hour
bootlegs.
I heard was a bootleg.
And also, don't forget the Mitch Hedberg first record with the bass playing in the background. I think that was his first record. Mm-hmm. That's also got a similar sound to what you're talking about. You know,
well, you can maybe relate to this. I think because of where you come from with music, I think that my approach to my comedy career. Because the game is small in Canada, and it's important to play the game, but the game here sucks. I've been always DIY about it. And so, yeah, it is kind of like that. It's like, I'm not releasing an album to be like, my grand album, everybody, please.
No, no.
It's like, no, people find this, comedy fans find this, and party and get down and spread the word, and I'll come to your town, and we'll keep building like a fan base like that. It's more about... Yeah.
I mean, I've adjusted what I usually wanted from comedians, which is like a real product I can hold in my hands, like a record or a CD. But nowadays, like you mentioned, you have these Spotify records. Nick's got Spotify records.
Mm. Although I was like very, lucked into getting it put out on LP and cassette as well, you know, which is important to me too.
But my point is... even though it's just on Spotify, I don't know if you did a hard version of it, a hard copy version of it, but you did go to the extent of getting artwork for it. So there's an art.
Yeah.
So just having a cover kind of connects a listener to an album, like an official release.
I think a PDF of liner notes or something with liner notes, even if it's on your Bandcamp or something.
But
here's
where I'm leading to is it's 2020. Your last album came out in 2016.
Yeah.
It's been 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we talk about Pryor, Carlin was another one where they pumped out records every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, some of those prior records were bootlegged and Carlin's weren't, but it was a consistent, you know, every 2 years you get a record. Now it's been 4 years for you. And how long has it been for you, Nick?
The same. And Carlin, just to kind of get bring it up, is, especially with George Carlin, I feel like those records were coming out because there were no Comedy Central hours. There was no HBO special at that time. So his albums... more than Richard Pryor, even.
Did you just burp?
All the time.
Okay.
Yeah. His records, more than Richard Pryor, even, have like the feel of a polished show, like an hour, you know? And, you know, people like Robert Klein, I think they were doing records that were like either actual specials, like How Delirious is Eddie Murphy Comedian, or they were essentially before you could have a yearly special.
That was my favorite phase in comedy, when Robert Klein and George Carlin started wearing leather suits in giant stadiums.
Yeah.
Especially Robert Klein.
Yeah, Robert Klein playing to 40,000 people is one of those things that you've got to be there.
What you brought up sort of brings me to my point. I have clearly obviously been amassing tons of material in those past four years. I have recorded an hour in the summer. That was a party. It was great. But there's a part of me that's like a little bit anxious now to finally get an official special produced by somebody. So I don't want to burn that material on Spotify and iTunes, etc. right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm holding on to it. But that's also why I released that rando 45 minutes thing on YouTube a week ago, because it's, you can see some new material there for sure. No old material, but also it's like, I'm not burning it necessarily because it will change and grow. And also 50% of that is me riffing with the crowd and getting loose.
So my question about that is, can you post that or release that 45 minute kind of bootleg random kind of a set with what music bands do, which is when they want to do an official bootleg, do it on a white label.
You know what? That's a really good idea. I probably could, but then also some of the material on it, I am still building. You know, like, it's like you, it's like releasing a skeletal version of a song that hasn't fully grown yet.
Right.
Which so I don't you know. Would do. You want to do that? I don't know. Yeah, I guess like.
I mean, some of those
bands usually do it after the album come out. Then they'll give you like a demos collection or a,
some. You know some of the Richard Pryor albums are that maybe because it's a bootleg.
Well,
you know?
Trust me, I'm a mega music fan because we can make the correlations all day. Because I actually think of my comedy career as like an indie kind of rock punk garage punk.
Well,
kind
that's
of guy.
How I,
that's
I
my
see.
Fourth, yeah, that's like, my stuff.
For me, it's important to put out the albums at least with some sort of. I don't know, like ideally feel physical release, you know, because it's that exact aesthetic. And also I view it like a band album where, you know, you don't have to put them out every year necessarily. Mm-hmm. And, you know, right. Until you wrap it up with something and, you know.
Today's music world is insane. If you don't put a song out every second, you're done. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, I think it's been great for me.
It's bad.
You know,
well, I think you guys hear barking when you're listening, by the way, that's me. I'm sick. I'm a wolf man.
But do you know what's a cool thing about music now is that there's a certain types of, like, SoundCloud, hip-hop stuff are actually, like, designed so you can play them off the speaker on your phone. You know, like that's how the sound is. And if you listen to it on headphones, it's like listening to it through a phone speaker.
Well, getting back to the process though, and whether or not you want to release that 45-minute, that's already out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's already out there. A lot of people today are so hip to the comedic process through Seinfeld and Netflix and podcasts and people dissecting comedy now. Yeah. It's more open than ever before. So it would be an interesting, maybe not before your special, upcoming special, but
well, I think you're right in the sense that, you have a good idea in the sense that, get fans like talking about this stuff, promoting it, listening to it in their cars, doing whatever they want, and then a film that clearly that is different than a loose show where it's like, what'd you say? Like talking to the audience and then going weaving in and out of material. Is different than, a filmed special. I think, comedy fans would understand, like, oh, now I'm seeing this set, like...
The mastered product.
Yeah, this piece,
with a bootleg kind of thing, if you wanted to clarify it for the audience, you could just edit it, you know, so with that in mind, you know? And I feel like the fact Howie Mandel has comedy albums, when there's so much visuals and crowd work related
Sorry, he
to
does? Who?
I'm
Where?
Guessing.
He has Fits Like a Glove, but what else does he have?
Well, okay, he has a comedy album.
He put that out in 86, 87,
But
though.
Didn't he do a Bobby's World album?
Everybody wants a whole lot of rhythm. Gotta do a little kicking. If you can't, then just go home. And don't look back. Steve Martin Brothers.
Oh yeah, the forgotten Steve Martin album.
Good
the
memory. One
that's forgotten.
Yeah,
well, that was
that's
the
incredible.
One, that was the one where he brought in co-writers, a co-writer, if not co-writers.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I think co-writers. Martin Mull helped write some of that album.
Really?
Yeah.
I think co-writers should be called coat writers.
Yeah, man. Forget the most. This is incredible. How about coke writer?
Yeah.
You know what's great is
Coke Brothers.
Speak just because I brought up Steve Martin. Couple of things.
How about that bass?
Steve Martin, this Steve Martin Brothers album, is one half comedy, one half banjo playing.
Yeah. You know what? The guy is sick in the head.
Which is which is something to think about if you want to put out another album.
Shot My wife girl. And I put Let's Get Small on because that's her favorite thing in the world.
Yeah.
And hadn't listened to it like in forever. And you forget how much banjo was already on his first album. Like, you think of him like, oh, he's really embraced the banjo in later years. It's like, no. He was banjo 1,000% all the time.
Is
all
Let's
the time.
Let's Get Small the one...
I think that's the
balloons
first one, isn't
on
it?
His head.
Yeah,
he's got balloons on his head.
Yeah, that's a good one. And Comedy is not pretty. That was the one that I was crazy for.
I think
for,
Wild
I think.
And Crazy Guy is the second one, right?
That's when he was huge.
That's
I mean,
King Tut
and he
stuff,
does that
right?
in a huge, huge hall.
Oh, so Comedy Is Not Pretty is the second one. Then,
what's
maybe.
The joke where he says that, I funny? You know, when he goes, people come up to me and they say, Steve, how are you so fucking funny?
I think that's Steve Martin Brothers. I don't know, actually. It all just melds into one thing. But
great
the second
bit.
Point I wanted to make about Steve Martin and you guys being comedians, I was gifted for, I think, my birthday a couple of years ago, the Steve Martin Masterclass course.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
Which, because the person who gave it to me knew I was a huge Steve Martin fan. Yeah. Not because I had aspirations for comedy.
That's cool.
It was just more about trying to find out a little bit more about his process. And
how was it?
It was interesting. Because he does it with like three or four aspiring comedians who...
I think I saw that clip
on the couch. Yeah, and he
who
gives...
Who books that?
I don't know, but he'll talk to the camera for about, you know, you, 10 minutes about every... There's lessons and stuff. And the best part is when you go and you know, there's like a message board of people who've bought the class and who are following it, and they have comments, and they're comedians. That's the best. Because I don't think any real comedian would actually, first of all, use it and take notes, and then second of all, go to the length of commenting on the masterclass site.
Yeah. How much banjo is in the masterclass? He's like, guys, it's very important.
But
to
he's someone who's lasted. Mm-hmm. I wish he continued. He segued more into movies and forgot about
and this Martin Short thing.
That's the only thing.
The
that
stuff
would...
with Martin Short. You know, he's
recently.
Kinda,
he's
but Martin Umbridge. Short is like
amazing. You know,
yeah, that's the thing.
He gets better with age.
That's the only thing that would make me skeptical about a masterclass with Steve Martin is that he always seemed obsessed with being an intellectual.
Yeah.
First.
Yeah.
And foremost, especially you get that when you read Still Standing, but also, and I think he pushed himself to go that way with like writing books and all that stuff. And then also.
The books are great. Oh, the serious books.
Yeah, the serious books.
Shop Girl's perverse.
And then, but what I want to get at is like, he's just been so disconnected from really grinding it out in comedy for decades that's the only thing that made me a little bit skeptical. And even he's almost like the straight man for the most part. During Martin Short. Steve Martin's thing.
Which was crazy. But yeah, I guess if
I really
you're saddled...
Loved it. I thought it was so great.
I did
great.
Too. Yeah. Saddled next to Martin Short, who's like this kind
of
like...
Ball
bomb
of
blast.
Energy.
Yeah.
And he's and also, more importantly, Martin
he's more
Short,
subtle of a comedian.
But you read Still Standing?
Yes.
Or
that
is it Born Standing Up?
Or... No. Oh, yeah. Maybe you're right. Born Standing Up.
Yeah, yeah.
It's Born... Still Standing is the CBC show.
It's a CBC show.
Born Standing Up. Yeah, I also read Pure Drivel.
Sorry.
Pure Drivel is awesome.
And
also essays.
I should read it.
Funny essays.
Yeah, Cruel Shoes.
I have
shoes.
All these Woody Allen books that I love.
I have Cruel
that
Shoes.
I have to throw out in the garbage now.
I like
sucks.
I like that you clarified you can't put them in a little library or something. They're going in the garbage.
No, you can't. I don't know.
Yeah, here's some books you can't read anymore.
Fatherhood?
Fatherhood.
By Bill Cosby.
Yeah.
Jeez. Fatherhood. And then
Bill Cosby should write a master class on compartmentalization.
Yeah, he should write a master class on guiltily helping, you know, helping people out of guilt, basically. Because that's his whole thing. That's like, remember Dave Chappelle's thing where he's like talking about Bill Cosby and he goes like, well, but he helped this. And it's like, yeah. He did it because of that.
Dave Chappelle should teach a master class on smoking like a bad boy.
He should teach a master class on breaking society.
Breaking Bad.
Yeah, he should have on Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Talking just about Jesse. But what's up with master class? I mean, I'm not trying to start a bit here.
Are they masters? Is this a class?
Like, this thing where David Lynch goes like, I make movies, and you should make movies too.
I was
just
really,
think about a movie. And
so
then
whoever created
movie.
Masterclass is a billionaire, because how did they get David Lynch and Steve Martin and these people to participate? That's what freaks me out.
They probably flattered them.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely hard to start up. Obviously, whoever's behind it has a lot of influence.
Right.
But all you need is like the first two people, and then everybody else wants to be associated.
I think it is that. It's like TED Talks, right? Like, it's very similar because TED Talks had that thing where it's like, you're going to hear a genius in their field saying stuff. And
if
then
you ever,
the other
if,
day.
Like, if you didn't do a master class, were you ever a master?
No.
You know? And then you die never knowing.
Yeah.
That's what it is. The Hollywood ego.
Vincent Van Gogh cut off his ear to go viral.
He should teach a master class on getting famous after.
I went to the MoMA the other week, and that Starry Night painting is there.
Oh, it's sick, dude.
Well, I wouldn't know because
I would love to puff a huge joint and blow smoke on that.
Everyone reeked of weed at the MoMA. I think they think it's more modern than it is. You know, like they're like modern art, man. And then they walk in, it's like 1800s.
They should change it to Mo Man.
There's great art in there. There's some Salvador Dali stuff I think you'd go crazy for.
Oh, man. And he's not. He was never on drugs. He is drugs.
Yeah, man. And also Mark Rothko, those color paintings. Oh, yeah,
I love that. Three colors.
Yeah, what was amazing was like being like, oh, yeah, I know his work. I know this painting. This is cool, but I know this. And then like kind of that was a room I decided to just like sit down in to take a rest.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was like, oh, man, like I feel like I'm in a temple right now.
I was going
like,
to ask
the good vibes coming from
I was going to ask
paintings.
You which room in the MoMA you rested in.
Well, thank you, yeah. No,
did you know that
you for about to ask that.
Oh,
man.
Yeah. That was my first question.
Yeah, I was like, oh, you went to New York recently? Where did you rest?
At the MoMA.
I walked into a Rothko painting once and went inside. And it was its own world. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
And I rested inside the painting.
And that's why now. Now you speak in colors.
Oh, yeah.
Blue, mostly.
You know what? I met a girl there, and she came in colors for the music fans.
Wow.
Does anyone know that?
What's that song?
No.
She comes in colors? Love.
Ah.
Right. Oh, right. Yes. Absolutely. Right.
Yeah, this coffee has made me my brain too fast.
I mean, it's going faster than I can keep up.
You know, look, Chris, let's get it back to your comedy career. Let's talk about something.
Well, you actually tour around the world all the time and rock and roll and make people party all the time.
Hang on.
We stick around watching movies like nerds.
Hey, I rocked some people the other week.
Were you playing in a band?
And some Brutal Nights covers, you know?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Do you want to start a punk band and I can sing?
Yes, and I'll do...
What are you going to do, Nick?
Dishes.
Sing as well.
I'll wash dishes.
Actually, there was a Teen Cred combo song called Wash Dish. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but we can't really get deep into okay, the... Sorry. But, you know, Wash Dish was like a casualty of
Teen
90s
Cred combo,
irony culture where I was deep in the irony. I was very 90s young.
90s irony culture. Is that but a title?
I did write a sequel called 2025 for Brutal Nights.
I think 90s irony culture broke Nick's brain. He went too hard.
I went hard.
But what's his name from Record Peddler? Was Mark from Record Peddler was in that band?
He was the drummer in our band, Mark Jarrett. Yes.
Isn't that cool? See, I know Toronto music.
Mark Jarrett came out to a comedy show I did. That was very exciting in Hamilton.
I haven't seen him in years, but he was the nicest guy to me because I was like a dumb kid trying to learn about garage rock.
Great dude.
Yeah, and he taught me stuff.
You need that record store guy, man.
Yeah.
You gotta have that record store guy, you know, so you can go in there and he can...
Attempt at a Mark Maron.
If you like
impression.
This, you'll like this.
Yeah, he'll go, oh, man, if you dig the Fugs, you might like Mad Magazine.
That's
Mark Jarrett. Is that Mark Jarrett?
No, it's
a composite of... A million
Chris and I are doing something that you...
It's okay, we're taking
it's
care
funny
of it.
Because in your business, riffing is playing a guitar. And with us, riffing is...
playing the guitars of our mouths.
What you're doing is funny as you make it up in the thing.
Comedians' guitars are their tongues.
Yeah.
Well, you guys have collabed. I was hoping for some sort of riffing.
Oh, God, delete it.
Didn't you guys? Didn't you guys collab somewhere?
We've collabed here and
there. I did his podcast.
I did his podcast.
Yeah, he did my podcast.
But no, like more like a...
We've made some
videos. We've been doing shows together since 2002.
Yeah. Maybe 2001, really.
That's crazy.
Probably 2001.
Yeah, like pirate video or something?
All that stuff, yeah. But we made a few
videos
together.
For those that don't
know
me that are listening, I'm bald. This is a long time of doing this shit.
And Chris was in a video years ago.
Can I say shit
I did
this?
With, probably. Yeah. Graham Wagner and Nathan actually filmed it.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And
Nathan
Chris
Fielder filmed it.
In Douche, Chris has a very funny ending and... I don't know.
Yeah.
There was like...
That's right. I have a cameo.
I think Chris and I have done a bunch of stuff together. And Chris, you can hear... I think both of us... I don't know if I... Chris has such big laughs on his
Nick's,
first album.
I'm Here All Week album. You can hear me in the back boosting the laughs.
Yeah, Chris... I like that you didn't just want to say laughing. You wanted to make it clear that you were trying to help me.
You can hear me going, ha ha ha, right, guys?
Well, I think that's the basis of everyone's laugh, is just because they feel nervous. So they're like,
no, it was good. It was. I'm totally joking.
Very supportive. You're always very supportive. And, you know, you love the Irishman, which is great.
And Beach Blood. I did start off the conversation addressing your records, but what's transitioned from records, because it's not as popular to put out now, are these Netflix specials.
Well, can I just back up with a serious question for Chris that I promise will take us somewhere. It'll take us on a journey. I think you'll like this, Chris.
You know what? Flow is passe. I think
right.
I think podcasts now need to be clunky and chunky.
Look, I am. I promise. I'm supplementing his question here.
Yeah.
And
okay.
The question is, how do you get a net? No, it's.
how can I get a Netflix special?
How do you get that?
How you do it? How do you do everything?
But no,
I don't
honestly,
have one. I don't have one.
I want to tell you that Chris, I don't know, the audience, I guess, was like always so funny, super funny. But you were doing a lot of different things for a long time, and then eventually you said, "No, stand up. I'm going to take it. I'm going to devote a lot of time to crafting it." And then
I streamlined stand up about 10 years ago.
About that, yeah.
But I was doing it for a long time.
Yeah, and from there, you know, you've sustained that work regimen, you know, for the entire time. I would say, or built on it, but definitely sustained it, you know, in terms of material and being out there performing. So I was just wondering, what keeps you on the straight and narrow? And if having two kids and a wife eventually is part of what lit a fire under that.
I would love to stop doing everything and drown in the ocean, to be honest.
Now that's the Chris I know.
Yeah, I don't...
No, that's the other side of you, though.
Like, two summers ago, I was like, should I just learn how to be a gardener? But then you have to go to school forever to be a gardener.
Exactly.
You can't even just start being a gardener. How did Chancey do it?
Chauncey.
From being there.
I think from Simplicity.
That's another random.
I think he was.
How did he do it? He was just an idiot. And they gave him the keys to the garden.
Sometimes gardeners are simple. I mean, that's, you know, what is simple, really?
I, like, get depressed if I'm not on stage. That's all it is. I don't know. Because, you know...
You don't
like,
get depressed on stage, too?
No, that's my problem. I maybe, like, joke about that stuff. But, like, you know, I don't know what it is. It's like, I don't know. The world is fucked up. You gotta just, like, I don't know. I don't like... comedy's cool because it's a good way of like not participating in the world that bothers you in a way. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You get to like stand outside and be like, fuck this, and everyone laughs their ass off.
Well, and also...
And that's kind of what makes me stick with it, to be honest, like mentally.
You
but
can
then,
talk about what frustrates you in a way that
also because it has
to.
Paid me, and it pays me, I have to keep doing it. Because I'm not going to start something over that doesn't pay me. I don't know what to do anymore.
So garden.
You mentioned Baroness Von Sketch.
But I love it.
Do you write on that show, too?
I was a guest writer for season 3 for a couple weeks, so, and that was a party. Those guys are
much
really
like,
inspirational.
Much like music, you know, I recently had a discussion about this, songwriting.
Yeah.
And if you come up with a riff that... you know, it's too good for the person you're working with.
Oh, yeah.
And you want to keep it, but they're in the room. Have you ever done a thing where you've come up with some sort of zinger and you're like, oh, shit, I just gave away a wicked joke for my set?
No, it's different because you're trying to write for the voice of the show and it's sketch. Yeah, sometimes maybe there's a little bit like, huh? But when you're in the room, you're basically like, I'm giving you all these
thoughts. The dedication is to making it for the thing. So it's just like,
but
and,
even
and
within
most of the time in writing, you're getting paid like more than you're getting paid to do stand-up. So it's like,
so
you're kind of like, well, that was worth,
all
you know, $500 or whatever. To get, you know, if I could sell a joke for $500 to someone, I'd have no act at all.
Yeah.
Because I'd sell every joke to someone named Chris once your ship comes in fully and you have that disposable money.
You should start a master class called Can I Sell You Jokes?
the Nick Flanagan, the Nick Flanagan asking masterclass. So
asking for asking, not even the G on asking for stuff. The no, Nick Flanagan it's masterclass.
More, it's more like if you don't understand something, ask, and if you continue to not understand it, ask the same thing, and then if that's still unclear, ask again. Never change the wording of the ask, and then if someone gets busy with other work, continue asking them.
Is this the riffing question that you guys have talked about? I've heard so much about.
Well, Chris riffed and I just sort of verbally did nothing, but I spoke.
Yeah, you presented
I would say,
it.
You yeah,
presented
I would say the maybe idea. Get a few different examples of riffing before you form your opinion on it.
But it's the same with guitar notes.
Yeah, you know, it would be like you.
Not every riff is good.
No,
that yeah, a musician mm-hmm. makes. No offense.
No, it's all good. Yeah.
So you're saying you're working on this eventual finished material.
Yeah.
For a special for yeah. a what's it? What's the end game?
I don't know. I would love it to be something like that. Canada. They're always like up in the air. It's a bit precarious. But so far, for the past few years, they've been making Crave specials for Canadian comics. They record an hour at a Just for Laughs festival, and then they'll put it up on so you can stream it on Crave. I would love one of those. I'd love a Netflix one. I'd love a Comedy Central one
or an HBO one.
I think everybody, HBO, yeah,
but or I Showtime.
Like, but the thing is like I am a sort of like it's kind of corny to say about myself, but it's not good. But I just know my brand. I'm like kind of raw, loose. Kind of comedian.
That's
like,
why you got to do it yourself, you know, with the special, and then you own it.
That's like when this guy in Winnipeg filmed this thing and edited for me, sent it to me, and I actually sat on it for a month being like, well, I can't do anything with this because I'm riffing so much and it's loose. But then something like impulsive just hit me and I was like, I'm gonna throw this out there and like actual like comedy fans hopefully can find it and pass it around. And
people
that is kind of
responding really well to
happening
it
right now. Yeah, it's been out for a week, but it's like I don't know. It's confusing right now because I'm really stubborn. I do come from maybe like a punky DIY kind of mentality still, which is stupid because I'm a married man with two kids and a mortgage. But it's something stubborn in me that it's like, I will do it. I just keep like sort of stopping playing the game to be like, no, I'm going to take risks. And just I don't know,
but you know I think the best thing...
I started talking about a few things at once, but do you sort of see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like I want that, and I'm waiting, and I think that so my way of like I don't just sit and wait. It's like I will keep making noise with comedy fans so that the demand is for my special. Mm-hmm. Like I'm not giving it because I've been waiting in a line and I got my turn. I want it because like I'm still constantly touring, constantly make everyone like die laughing to the point where the demand is there. So like my opinion, there's people like in the comedy industry that get a special because people in the industry were like, this person deserves a special now because they like, you know, we trust them as the like some execs trust them.
Well, Chris,
but it's not the same as like amassing fans as far wide as you can,
but that's
like,
my fear.
Chris is the fucking best.
That's
you know
my
what I'm
fear.
Saying? Like
or
that's who I like after doing it, especially in Canada because it's such a small industry. Like the people that have saved my career over and over again are my peers in the business, like comedy, other comedians talking about me and promoting me, and the fans that I have gathered on my own.
I noticed that you used to do a podcast and you don't do it anymore, and that's another means of self-promotion.
Yeah, so I want to start a new one, but maybe like a little different, but that there's a good fan base for that podcast. Yeah,
why did you leave it?
To be honest, I joined a production company that promised me the world, and they sucked and they dropped the ball, and they didn't do shit for me, and then I just lost all enthusiasm about the podcast after that.
I hope this appearance recharges your batteries. I mean, this has been nothing but...
this is great, right?
Yeah, like no complaints and everyone's having a great time.
Yeah.
No, but yeah, that was another
Well, thank
question.
You for asking me about me. I don't get to talk about this stuff that much. I go on podcasts, comedy podcasts, but we just riff and be silly and say nonsense.
Well,
but I never... for some reason, the combination of you being sincere and jacking me up on coffee, I really did. I haven't talked about my ambitious desires like that in a long time.
Good.
Well, I am very curious to hear about comedians and the process that comedians go through when it comes to, you know, trying to figure out 2020 and yeah. doing some sort of art form that isn't, that's really, really loose. You know, it's yeah. not, you're not a musician or a filmmaker. No. It's so loose. It's a wild west
world. I do choose a hard road. I'm a stubborn, hands-on guy, and I used to tour with Yuck Yucks, for example. But then I was producing my own tours, too, and there was conflict because Yuck Yucks, you can't play other rooms in cities that they have clubs, and they get a little upset. So that was about four...
Very old school.
Four or five, mm-hmm. I know.
Was Nick on one of your tours?
No.
Nick? No, I don't think so. No,
awkward. Sorry, guys.
Together. No, we played in different cities together.
I'd love to come along for a tour sometime, Chris. I can drive now.
Oh, sorry to make it awkward.
Oh, do you have a video of you doing comedy online you can send me?
No.
Nick has... No, Nick's opened for us.
I've opened for Danko Jones.
Yeah.
I've opened for...
Nick basically got a start... Well, you had a fan base from... Brutal Nights, and then you would...
I was doing comedy before Brutal Nights, actually.
But you were opening for bands.
Yes, but that was before Brutal Nights, too. It was just... Yeah. It was Ahem. Just something...
Did you yes. open for Danko Jones?
Yes.
Did he start it?
No. No, but Nick and I worked together, and then... Yeah. And then I used to... It was just him and I at open mics, and I would record him on a cassette.
Yeah.
Recorder.
Whoa.
His first... few times.
Yeah, I had no idea that your history was that deep.
Very yeah. first time, actually. Very first.
Oh, yeah, the very first one.
Maybe
at
three,
the,
four times.
A music open mic at the Old York Tavern.
That was another life, but
I remember
it's
that
true.
Place.
Yeah.
You know what? Well, since we were talking about Richard Pryor and Steve Martin, I go back to the real old guys. I love the old vaudeville stuff.
Yeah, it's
every time
awesome.
I watch an old like clip of Groucho or W.C. Fields.
Oh, you're going to say Ku Klux Klan.
We watched Groucho Marx on the Dick Cavett show.
No, I'm not even going to give you a sound.
If you have a second to watch Dick Cavett's
Dick Cavett.
with Groucho Marx or anything with Dick Cavett.
Dick Cavett. Yeah.
He's the king. I'll tell you something super funny that happened recently. But Dick Cavett ends that the hour one with Groucho. He goes, I might even get emotional talking about it. He goes, gee, you know, he's like, only one person in the whole world gets to be Groucho Marx, and it was you. So, you know, and it's like,
yeah.
He's just so good at saying stuff like that. Yeah. He's like, you're lucky it was you.
Considering, like, you know, Nick always comes on here with a bunch of impressions.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was a pretty bang on Dick Cavett
impression.
Did I do
a good Dick Cavett?
Yeah, yeah.
No, it was good.
I'll tell you a good one. So my friend Mike and I, our friend Mike and I, yeah. we just saw Cassavetes' Husbands at the New Paradise Theater. And that movie, have you seen it? It's
no.
a shit show. It's like, but it's kind of good in an artsy experimental 70s way.
Yeah.
But it's Peter Falk, Cassavetes, and Ben Gazzara going nuts. So I watched the Dick Cavett, I've watched it before, but the Dick Cavett promo from the 70s, you know, like... They come on and they're just being bastards on the show,
yeah.
like acting like they're wasted. They're being like their characters.
That was kind of a common thing with Cavett, was people would be kind of like jerked to him because he was so ridiculous. Not all the time,
but they're just like falling all over the place, being assholes, not letting him talk, interrupting him, trying to make jokes that aren't landing with the audience at Dick's expense. Then Ben Gazzara is the only one that's trying to play this talk show game a bit and take pity on Dick Cavett, and Ben goes. Okay, you want to hear about the movie? If there's some scenes in it, or if there's some parts of it that you think are too long, it's because Dick cuts him off and goes, gee, I haven't even seen the movie yet, and I already think it's too long.
Nice.
And I was like, oh, and it's so enjoyable. You got to watch it.
Yeah, yesterday my mom was
and then
like...
they're like, they start acting like assholes again, and it's crazy. And then Dick just looks right at the camera and the audience, and he's like, See, this is why I didn't join a fraternity. You gotta watch it. He's so good at Burns. He even like burns Don Rickles pretty good.
Oh, the Don Rickles appearance is also crazy. The best. The Don Rickles one is so good because
Don Rickles on Dick Cavett.
Yeah, no, it's amazing because Don Rickles is like he's half sincere, like he's half being the real guy, but he's also immediately reverting to like burning Dick Cavett at his own or making jokes about his wife or himself, like at just random intervals. So it's both like a cool insight into how smart a person he was, but also he's being hilarious, which Don Rickles, man, it's like...
Yeah, the old stuff always inspires me.
Yeah,
the
new I've been stuff. Watching Don Rickles lately, and it's just, it's amazing, and I think it's really important for us to kind of maintain or try to find...
So have you watched old Jackie Leonard stuff?
No.
Because he is apparently like Don, like they, like, actually Dick Cavett makes that joke, he's like... he's like, I'm really glad to have you on the show tonight because I'm such a huge fan of Jackie Leonard.
That's funny.
You know, because apparently Don Rickles...
Fashioned himself after.
Yeah,
and Jackie Leonard has a good burn, like you can see. I forget, he's like talking about another comedian, but he's like, keep it going for so-and-so. I forget who it was. He's like, you got to admit, he's got a really great comedy style, eh? Mine. So it's like really. That kind of like one-liner burn type stuff. I love
the guys that Don Rickles seems to have had like a spiritual influence on, like Dave Attell, you know, has that Rickles element. And then, oddly enough, Brad Garrett is like, if really? You watch Brad Garrett.
I've never seen Brad Garrett's
He does mostly I mean, I've seen insulting like crowd work.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've probably seen like a way old Just for Laughs with Brad Garrett, but nothing else.
No, like Brad Garrett's, you know, he's such a natural actor. I don't mean to go on this weird Brad Garrett tear, but when I would see him on that Raymond show, I'd be like, this guy's like a good actor, you know? I didn't even know Raymond he did stand-up. And then when I finally saw that he did stand-up, I was just like, oh, man, like, lucky him. He can act and he can joke. And he's got height and...
He's like, imposing how's everybody element. Doing today?
No, it wasn't more like,
Raymond.
Hey. That was how
Hey, I'm... Raymond, I just shot a perp. You have to help me. That's close to... you're getting close to... what's
DJ
his name?
Hooker? Adrian's Man?
Yeah.
I'm just looking forward to writing Brad Dave. Garrett in the description of this episode.
Yeah, and in the RIP obituary in the Danko Jones Times, your online newsletter, when he dies.
Brad Garrett?
You're going to write it, Brad. In the, you have a
Danko where Jones you, Where are you taking this one?
Right? How far I don't is want this going? Him to die.
I want to say that, this is also why I'm talking very fast. I usually don't talk this fast. You got to keep up with Nick.
You got to keep up with Nick?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
you got to keep up and over with Nick.
That's the name of your next podcast.
No, you don't have to prop me up.
Well, listen.
Bernie's.
Weekend at Bernie's. That's what I'm going to call my roast battle show.
You know how, you know, here's my impression, there's a certain, I feel like...
How did Jeff Ross miss out on Weekend at Bernie's?
But
that's crazy.
I was hanging out with a comedian the other week, and he had...
I feel sorry for you.
Well, I mean, there were financial
Were costs. They good or did they suck?
They're fun to hang out with.
Oh, good.
But he had...
I like that comedian. He's good at hanging out. That's when you know you suck.
That's like a Rogan podcast. You know, you're cool. I like hanging. You're good at just hanging out. You know, not everybody's good at hanging out. But no, he had a roast battle hoodie on, like one of those Jeffrey Ross.
Sick.
And I was kind of like, this is a style of comedian who wears like
merch. You mean
swag? You know,
there's merch. There's comedy merch
for the roast battles.
For roast battles.
Oh yeah.
It's weird. We're talking about like Don Rickles and stuff, but to be honest, I just want to say I don't really like this modern roast battle shit. I think it really sucks.
No, it's not what the same as it's not the shit. Same as Don
it's a
Rickles.
Show where they
Jeffrey Ross's
try to
show
burn each other.
Really, I saw it on a plane.
There's some good stuff for there's sure, some but good ones. There's some good ones.
But
I
as
don't
a
know.
As
it's
a
not my thing 100%.
As a form, you mean in the whole scene?
Yeah, like, I mean it's also been used in Toronto is one of the few cities that doesn't have like some sort of club connection to this because a lot of clubs, their sort of junior leagues tend to be these hosting these roast battles, you know.
But also like those, in the comedy Friars store, Club, that's like the Friars Club roasts and all that old vintage stuff.
I love it.
it's clever. They're trying to be like the innuendos and clean and stuff. It's a different, it's like a almost like a gentlemanly type of thing. This is not what's happening right now.
Isn't it roasting people that we all know, celebrities? So yeah, you kind of already know where the punchline is headed. Whereas
yeah, so in if roast I'm battles, roasting you'll see,
like
yeah.
Peter, like who the
exactly?
Fuck is
you'll
Peter
see a brand new amateur comedians
well, the yeah. problem
that go up against each other. They don't know each other. They're just trying to make it in the biz. So they say yes to like their 5-minute set on TV, and they look at each other and they go, "You're ugly."
Yeah.
It's like, I hope I make it, Mom. Like,
but,
that sucks. Yeah.
But it's part of this weird thing with comedy. And,
yeah, but
and
you're ugly, though.
Like,
boom.
Music has developed more of it, but it's sports, you know? The sort of sports mentality brought
yes,
into
yes,
this.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's like, I don't need, which is funny, I said the junior leagues earlier, but it's like, you know, when comedy was just like people who you'd see on TV, the idea of them needing to be like, you know, they just aren't going on podcasts or something all the time being like, it's just important for me to be the best. You know, it's like you're actually just seeing it in action and it's just inherent. So you're not thinking, okay, if I go do comedy 9 times a week, I'll be as good as X. So we have an era now where there's a ton of very polished people who are performing all the time, but like their act might not be good. It just is like polished and right there, and that can be confounding.
It's like a trick.
Do you mind if I do a bathroom trip?
Chris, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks, Chris.
Thanks for having me.
Nick's going to the can right now, but it was great to have you on. And the invitation is open again. Maybe
thanks.
Next time, bring some skits.
Yeah. I'll bring some skits, some
you know,
gags.
Gags.
Yeah. I got sound effects.
And impressions.
Yeah, yeah.
And more impressions, please.
Yeah, I think I can muster up some, sure.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're listening, my Twitter needs new followers because I got screwed in the summer and I had to start all over again. So it's at Chris Locke World. And on YouTube, it's Chris Locke Comedy. And watch that crazy video of me in Winnipeg. It's pretty fun. Some wild stuff happens.
And Instagram?
At Chris Locke Fun.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, that was what my old Twitter was called, at Chris Locke Fun, and then it got screwed, and so that one's called at Chris Locke World. You'll find it. Thank you for having me.
I eat a lot of pizza and I drink a lot of booze. I think sometimes I feel bad when I have those days where I spend the whole day on my couch in my track pants eating pizza, right? Because that's not what track pants were made for. Like, they were originally for people that wanted to get fit, not get fat. That's funny to me. That's like the same thing as going down to a sports shop and buying a baseball glove just so you can hold more chips. I like doing that joke. There's always a few guys in the audience that are like, that's a good idea. See? Yeah, it's a good idea, because Doritos are big, and I want more than my friends got. I don't like my friend as much as I like all these Doritos.